car and you wonder if it's worth anything. Maybe Pop left you something. Maybe there's something that's sitting in your garage and has been gathering dust for years and you're just wondering, what do I do with it? Do I sell the spare parts? Do I hang on to it for the next generation? We're going to have a couple of experts in chatting with me, talking about cars, and you'll be surprised just how much some old cars can fetch. But first, hello, hello. Well, it's hello, hello. It kind of sounds like the way my folks say hello. This is Cat's Empire.
Hello. Hello.
Hello, hello. It is Antoinette Latouf on ABC Evenings. That was Cat Empire with Hello. And we're going to talk cars now, and in particular classic cars. What they are, whether or not you might have one in your garage or on blocks in a shed somewhere, and how they've become a booming investment draw card. Well, some of them. So take this for instance, a Nissan Skyline circa 1999. What do you reckon? Maybe a few thousand? An old car? Very few mod cons? Well, one just sold for $150,000. And at the very top of the collector's range, a 1950s Mercedes, a couple of months ago, smashed the record for a classic car sale, $250 million Australian dollars. A quarter of a billion for one old car. So presumably, the new owner won't be letting the teenagers put the P plates on that one. Well, two people who know the classic car market inside out are with us, and they are happy to take your calls to see what your car might be worth, or if you have an eye on a classic to buy, a car you've always desired, well, just how much might you have to come up with to find one? 1-300-222-702, or if you prefer, text 0467-922-702. Mark Haybittle is the Managing Director of Supercar Secrets, which deals in veteran classics. And because the classics car market is an international one, we have also got Shirley Edwards Langford. She is the Managing Director of Supercar Secrets in the United Kingdom. And her firm invests in collectible cars around the world and moves them between countries. Hello to you both.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am very well. Mark, let's start with Mercedes. That just blows my mind. How come it's worth a quarter of a billion? Why was it so special?
Well, it was owned by Mercedes themselves, and they actually had it in their personal museum. And there was actually only two of that particular model ever built, which is the 300 SLR. And it was actually named after the guy that that designed it. Two of them were available, and they decided to keep one. The other one went up for sale, and yeah, as you correctly said, $249 million was the price, and it's the new, it set the new goalpost, I would say, in the highest prices sold for cars, because previous to that, the Ferrari 250 GTO was the highest selling car at $72 million, so it's eclipsed that well and truly.
Well and truly, and the Skyline, a Japanese car, more than two decades old, that sold for $150,000. Really?
Yeah, look, there's an awful lot of that particular model on the market. They're the R32 GTRs. And interestingly enough, like 2 years ago, you could easily pick one of those up for under $20,000. And now they've gone on to $115,000, in some cases a lot more. There's a 1999... R34 GTR, which is the later version, that's actually on car sales at the moment for $500,000, which is purple in colour. And that's more appropriate for that particular model of car. And in fact, those R34s go right up to $700,000 and $800,000 now for a Nissan. You know,
so
quite
was
amazing, isn't it?
Was there any way of knowing a couple of years ago, you know, that Nissan Skyline that was worth 12 to 15K 2 years ago, was there any way of knowing that just a couple of short years later, how much the value would increase.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we study this all the time, and we talk to all the collectors all the time. So we knew, so that's why we purchased some of them. So myself and Shirley, you know, we got together and bought a few of them, and we, you know, we know all the cars that are going to rise before they rise. So that's why we do what we do, and why investors invest with us, you know.
Well, that's also why we have you on the line. And Shirley, we'll get you in just a minute. Very quickly, Mark, how does the classic car market work, not just for car lovers who want to drive a classic, but for investors? Because obviously this is what you do for a living. You monitor these things, you make these projections and purchases. So tell us how that market works.
Yeah, well, it's it's a very well-established market in the UK, as Shirley will tell you shortly. Everyone's been doing it for a long, long time over there, and even to the point where you've got children investing in collectible cars because they know that certain models go up. I mean, in a nutshell, all collectible cars go up. It's a question of by how much, and so you just have to know the ones that are going to outstrip the market and are going to rise by a lot more than the other ones. So it's a fairly safe thing to be investing in, that's for sure. But some cars just rise by meteoric amounts, such as the Nissan GDRs and Subaru WRXs, and a lot of Japanese cars are just going absolutely through the roof now. So the way the investment thing works is that basically people can invest, you know, in these cars and capitalise on the growth, because they're only going one way, they're only going up. And it's a fairly new asset class here in Australia. It's, you know, it hasn't really gathered the same momentum that it's got in the UK, you know.
Well, Shirley, tell us about the UK and European car market, because it is a hot one.
It is. We've been going for quite a long time. It's a massive thing over here, classic cars, collectible cars, basically cars in general. People are very passionate about them. We've got people that have got really high-end cars, obviously a massive collections that we know, but equally, I go to a lot of car shows where just your average member of the public who's passionate about his classic car gets it out on a Sunday, takes it off down to the local show. He might have only spent a few £1,000 on it about 5 years ago. That's, you know, going up in value more than what it would, money in the bank would. So that's why a lot of people have got into it over here,
And some cars that are cheap in the UK are worth a lot more in Australia. How come? Is that just about the supply and demand issue?
Well, when I started off with Mark back in 2014, 2015, it was the other way round. You guys hadn't really discovered the classic car market. And we used to pick up cars there and send them to here where they were worth, you know, sort of like double or more here. But things have turned around now. You guys, you know, we've obviously had the pandemic. People have been worried about their money and what's happening to it. So you guys have got onto the whole classic car, collectible car bandwagon, and you've joined in with us lot. And you're actually doing better than we are at the moment with a lot of cars. So we're sending them the other way around.
So it does work. So does it work in reverse, that cheap Australian cars are worth a heap overseas?
Unfortunately, not.
Okay.
The Australian car market, you know, with your Falcons, etc., they appeal mostly to Australians, whereas a lot of the cars that we have over here and the European ones are sort of like a worldwide thing. Mm. That said, you know, you guys pay an awful lot of money for them and they are very collectible over there. And some Americans like them too. So you have got a sort of like a small amount of the American public that really like them too. But those are the main markets. It's very rare over here to see Australian classics on the road.
And Warren, you're on the road near Ballina. You have a couple of classic cars in your garage. Tell us about them and what's your question?
Well, I've got some classic cars plus classic motorcycles. I've currently got a 1970 Holden V8 utility, which is pristine. I'm just interested to know what your guests think about that. The gentleman, I didn't quite get his name. I've got Shirley's name.
We've got Mark Haybittle.
Mark, sorry, Mark.
So tell us about your car.
Yeah, it's a 1970 Holden V8 HT utility.
It's an HT, is it?
Yeah, it's HT. It's pristine. It's got a 308 and a Turbo 400 and all the good gear in it. It's just pristine and very period style. But this one might be one for Shirley. Shirley Punt probably doesn't do it in motorcycles, but I've got a couple high-end classic motorcycles. I've got one that's one of 207 built in the world.
Well, let's do one at a time. Let's start with the cars. Mark, are you familiar? Well, I'm assuming you're familiar with that car and the make.
The H2U, yeah. Now, they didn't actually come out with a V8, did they, on the H2?
Yes, they did, yeah. They had a 253 in it. This has been slightly modified, but it's all period style. It's not bastardised in any way, but it's all classic style, 1970 style. But it's just got
it's original engine and gearbox, is it?
No, it used to be a six-cylinder, but still, doesn't matter if it was a six-cylinder or a V8 these days. With that particular model, they're up around $40,000 to $50,000 these days.
Yeah, they are. That's absolutely right. I mean, that is about what they're worth. The only thing with that one is that normally, with the whole collector market, it's very driven towards total originality, and what I mean by that is, you know, it needs to have the engine that the car was manufactured with, you know, that the car came out of the factory with. And once the engine's been changed, it kind of devalues it a bit. But in saying that, it would still be exactly what you're thinking. It would still be between 40 and 50K at least, probably a bit more. I mean, they're very sought after, those HDs. Very, very few of them around now.
Okay, Warren. Warren, well, you seem to be on the money with the car. Tell us about the motorcycle.
Well, I've got two really classic motorcycles. I've got a 1988. It's called an 851 Tricolor Superbike Kit version. It's one of 207 they built. It's actually a factory race bike, but it was one of 14 in Australia that was actually compliant for road use because they couldn't sell them as race bikes, so they do expensive at the time. And I've been offered $60,000 for that so far, and I've knocked the pack. And that's pretty much, you know, what it's worth these days. And it's a really high-end bike, but they're very, very hard to get a hold of. If I put it on the market, even if I put it on eBay, put it on the world market, I'd probably have no trouble selling it anywhere else in the world, you know. Like, it's one of a very rare motorcycle.
Okay, Mark, what's your estimation here?
Yeah, look, as you know, I'm no expert on motorbikes. Mm. That's more of a Shirley thing. My expertise really is just on cars between 1965 and 2005, you know.
Okay, Shirley?
Mark says it's a my thing. all I can tell you is, because my thing is that I grew up in the late 70s and early 80s, a time when, you know, everybody had one of these Kawasaki Z1000s and things like that. Or my brother did, and I thought they were fabulous. And I had small bikes as well, but smaller bikes, should I say. I actually know quite a bit about 1970s Japanese motorcycles. But when it comes to the bike that this gentleman has, I couldn't tell you too much. All I can tell you is that it ticks the boxes with regards to the amount of numbers that were released of that vehicle. That's always a big thing. If ever you're buying anything that's a classic bike or car, the less that were produced, the more that the bike will go up or the car will go up in value. So that's really big. It's tick the boxes there. But with regards to race bikes, I'm no expert, I'm afraid. All I can say to you is that there are places that will give you a very good valuation, and I would go to somebody and not say that you're looking to sell it, just say that you're looking for a valuation. I do have people that would be able to, I could put you in touch with for that, but I am afraid I can't help you on that level at the moment.
Thanks for that, Shirley. Warren?
Very sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. It's not for sale anyway. It's going to the grave with me, so.
you're more curious. Thanks for the call. Classic car experts Mark Haybittle and Shirley Edwards-Langford of Supercar Secrets are with us on ABC Evenings. Give us a call or a text if you would like to know the value of your old car or have a question for Mark or Shirley. 1300 222 702 or 0467922702. Here is your chance to get some expert advice. Not from me. I've got no idea what that beast you had handed down from your parents might be worth. TB from Randwick has written, my brother-in-law has an unrestored, fairly original 1972 Monaro, bit of a bogan car, wondering if it's worth getting it restored. Mark, do you have any thoughts?
Absolutely. So that would be an HQ Monaro. Yeah, they are racing up the charts in value. Anything HQ, HJ, at the moment, they're seeking big values. So definitely worth restoring. Even if it costs you, $60,000 to $70,000 to restore it, it's definitely worth doing, 100%. Yeah. Well,
there you go, TB. Get your brother onto that restoration. And Shirley, what are the most coveted cars in the Northern Hemisphere? Like, what are the hot classics at the moment?
Well, one that never goes out of popularity is the E-Type Jag. They do particularly well. They have sort of plateaued a little bit last year, but now they're on the rise again. So anything E-Type, also taking into account that they're worth quite a lot there in comparison with here now, which is quite interesting. If you want to get into something, a lot of people are suddenly buying old Aston Martins, but there's one in particular, which is DB7, which you can pick up a reasonable fixer upper for around about 18k. That's on the way up. BMW M3, Lotus Elise S1. There's quite a few at the moment that are really starting to make tracks. So, ring us in with what you got and we'll let you know if it's worth more in the UK or over there.
And Phil asks, he writes, what half a dozen cars, affordable now, are worth putting aside to be collectibles in 5 to 10 years?
It's easy to summarise with one word, Japanese.
Japanese, oh, there you go.
Absolutely. Anything from a Datsun 240Z upwards through all the Toyotas, Coronas, Celicas, really, you can't lose. Absolutely can't lose. They'll all double or triple in the next year at the very minimum.
And Rob from Grenfell, you have a very old car and you've got no idea what it's worth.
Yes. Hi, everybody. We've got a 81 380 SL. Yes, it's in pretty good nick and it's time to go to somebody else. We just have no idea what it's worth.
What sort of kilometres does it have?
150.
All right, well, that's pretty good for 380 SL. What year was it again?
81.
81. Well, they've been racing up the charts along with most other collectibles, and the 500 SL, which is the sort of golden child, they're getting 55 to 60K for those. The 380s, obviously a little bit less sought after, but still in the 40s. For a 380, for a 1981 380. Does it have both roofs? Has it got the hard roof?
Got
the hard roof and the soft roof. Yeah, okay. Yep. Well, yeah, definitely a solid 40, probably heading towards 50, probably late 40s with those Ks on it, if it's got books and history and all that, and it's all original.
Yep. All original. Yep. Cool.
Yeah, very nice car. Shirley likes those. Well, she likes SLC.
Yeah, I do. And I'd like to say that that's actually one that's doing reasonably well in the UK too. So if you've got one that's in very good condition, you're talking about sort of like 25 to 30K over here, so worth the same sort of money here too.
Yep.
Well, hope that was...
But definitely worth keeping, I would say, for a while. It's only on the way up. Even if you kept it for another year, the way that they're going at the moment, you're standing to make about another 25% on your investment there, at least.
Yeah, right.
Well, there you are, Rob. Right. You got some answers.
There we go. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good
you're
evening.
Welcome.
You too.
Thanks,
bye.
Rob.
We have a message that's come through. Hi, Antoinette. Can you explain why these classic cars are going up? Is it because of what's been happening these past 2 years, or because we are going electric, or because car manufacturers are in demand? We have a BMW M3 2004 that's also gone up a bit. That is not something I can explain, but Shirley, perhaps you can.
Well, basically, it's a part of history that you can own over here. Everybody's passionate about their cars, as I keep on saying. But it's even with electric cars becoming popular, et cetera, et cetera, this is something that's never going to be made again. Mm. So basically you're buying into what was maybe a part of your childhood or your youth on some level. Maybe your dad had one of these cars or something. So, and all that's happening with these cars is that not only have you got the memories, you can drive it around, but it's a great investment. And that is because of the rarity of them. You know, a lot of them sadly have fallen by the wayside and they're beyond restoration, but we restore an awful lot for people. You know, even with ones that we restore, many of them, it's only putting more value on them depending on what the vehicle that they are. But it all boils down to one thing. It's the rarity factor and the fact that they're not going to be making any more of them.
So you're speaking about the rarity factor. George from Piemont has a question about whether another factor may make a car worth more. George?
Yeah, good day, guys. It's actually, I wanted to inquire about a Jensen Interceptor, a classic British car. A friend of mine actually had... What's that?
We love them.
Yeah.
We certainly do.
We've had a few of them.
Yeah, they're amazing cars. My friend actually drove me in one, and I'll tell you what, they can go. They're amazing-looking car and a solid body, you know, unique body and aluminium frame. But the interesting about it was that he ended up with a Jensen that had a really fascinating history of previous ownership, and he didn't realise it until he took it to get service, and the mechanic looked at the logbooks and found out, because he got given it in lieu of a debt, and it was actually the car that was originally owned by Jimi Hendrix. Guitar player, yeah, and Jimmy unfortunately died before he could actually take collection of it. It was in the, but his estate passed it on to Ginger Baker, the drummer from Cream, you know, from Eric Clapton.
Wow.
So he took it through South Africa, and through a very convoluted and absolutely amazing story, which I haven't got time to give justice to, it ended up in his hands, and then he realised, and eventually a few people kind of tracked him down. He got offers from some very famous guitarists to buy it off him. And he eventually ended up selling it a few years ago to, supposedly, through a broker, to the Jimi Hendrix Museum in Seattle for $100,000, I'll say. But from what you're saying, I reckon he probably got underdone on the classic car market. I reckon he could have picked up a lot more from what you're saying. But I just wanted to, my basic question was not only about Jensen's, but about how much the cachet of a previous celebrity owner or some kind of story like that add to the normal price of a classic car on top of its natural price?
Oh, look, it's massive.
Mark, can I take that one?
Yeah, look, it's absolutely massive. Yeah, thanks for that, Shirley. Yeah, look, it's absolutely massive. We recently, or about 12 months ago, we handled a hot rod that was owned by John Bonham from Led Zeppelin. And, you know, that would have to be one of the most valuable hot rods around. And we brought it in for a gentleman here in Sydney. Yeah, that would have to be, without doubt, one of the most valuable hot rods there is, because John Bonham owned it. And there's been quite a few historic sales over recent years of cars owned by rock stars and musicians, and also...
Princess Diana. Don't forget.
Princess Diana.
Well, yeah, well, that's a good example. That's a brilliant example, Shirley. To give you some idea, she had a Ford Escort RS Turbo, and that went for $1.2 million, and it was just a Ford Escort, but it was a pretty special one. They normally only sold them in white. She had one in black, but it was Princess Diana's. So that probably explains that perfectly, because a normal Mark III Escort, which is what that was, a Mark III RS Turbo Escort, maybe £30,000, £35,000. That went for $1.2 million, which is £600,000. So there you go. It's hard to calculate the difference, isn't it?
Thanks.
It is. And there's another guy that's really into his classics over here. Obviously, you guys know who Nick Mason is from Pink Floyd. Well, here's one example of one of his cars. He bought one in the 1970s, a 250 GTO, Ferrari 250 GTO for $37,000, that's now worth more than $40
million. Oh, my Lord.
So it seems these rock stars know what they're doing. I'm sure they do.
Greg? Oh, they certainly do. And Nick Mason's right on the money with that. I mean, as we know, with the Ferrari 250 GTOs. There was only 39 ever built, and they had got the previous highest sale price of $72 million before this recent Mercedes sale for $249 million that you spoke of earlier in the show. So, just amazing. I mean, if you add the celebrity factor to one of these cars, it just absolutely skyrockets the price.
Great question. Thanks for your call, George.
Cheers.
And thanks for your time, Mark and Shirley. Our messages are going off. Everybody wants a valuation. There's a huge amount of enthusiasm and passion for classic cars. So appreciate your expertise.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Happy to help.
Mark Haybittle is the Managing Director of Supercar Secrets, and Shirley Edwards Langford is the Managing Director of Supercar Secrets in the United Kingdom. This is Antoinette Latouf on ABC Evenings.